Hello, everyone. I'm Kevin Weiner, and thanks for tuning in to another broadcast of Beyond Everything Radio. And guess what? I have a question for you. Do you want to be free? In today's broadcast, we continue our look at the familiar Bible stories, focusing today on the healing by the Pool of Bethesda. Join me now as we see beyond the miracle into the subversive message Jesus brings to religion about its commandment to obey the Sabbath. In this case, breaking the law was the precondition of not only healing and liberation, but it's the very means of keeping the Sabbath holy. Hello, everybody, and I'm so glad to have you back. Thanks for coming to another episode of Beyond Everything Radio. My name is Kevin Weiner, and I'm an online pastor, author, and uncoach, and I'd like to welcome you to the program, especially if it's your first time. I'd like to welcome you to Sunday. You know, everybody, thanks so much for telling your friends and spreading the word about this program. I'm glad to have you talking about it. I'm glad that the content here inspires you and gives you something to really chew on and discuss throughout the week. I love to hear your feedback. You're probably used to folks on listener-supported radio getting on and asking for your financial support. Well, in this case, as an online pastor, I do not have the overhead that a lot of brick-and-mortar ministries carry, and so as a result, I can afford this program. I do not need your financial support. I know that's probably odd to hear that on listener-supported radio, but you know what I do need? I do need to hear from you. I want to know that this is a worthwhile investment and that you're out there listening. And so I want to invite you to go to my website, kevinwinder.com. Remember, I spell my name like the number 7, K-E-V-E-N, winder.com. And when you do sign up for my weekly newsletter, it's called Winder's Windshield. In there, you'll get access to weekly newsletters that have, tons of content that that you can tap into. Over 6 years of blog posts, 2 years of podcasts, every single radio program, and all kinds of offers and things as they come about. Go to kevinwinder.com, sign up for Winder's Windshield. Do that today. I'll be so glad that you do. Now, folks, if you are just tuning in, then you'll recognize, or you won't recognize, the fact that we are looking at very familiar Bible stories, and we're trying to do so in a way that will allow you to hear them for the very first time. And that's a real challenge, and I think there's a way that I can do that, and I'm going to explain that here in a minute. But today we are going to look at the healing that took place at the Pool of Bethesda. And I'm sure you've heard sermons about this. Many of us have. But the title of today's sermon or talk or podcast or whatever you want to call it, the title is called Break the Sabbath and I'll Heal You. Break the Sabbath and I'll Heal You. Now, we've been retelling these familiar Bible stories, like I've said, and we've heard them a lot. And as an online pastor, I have to tell you, I have worked very hard to free myself from any denominational or institutional frameworks that would curtail the hermeneutical process. And if you don't know what that means, that's just a $10 seminary term for Bible interpretation. And what happens when you're within a denomination or an institution is you strongly align with a certain perspective, or you get support from the denomination so long as you subscribe to a certain perspective or interpretation. And then everything you read and teach has to basically fit within that doctrinal precision or doctrinal perspective. Now, if you break free from that, and you become independent, and you aren't governed by what the Baptists say, or what the Methodists say, or how the Reformed Church says it, or how the mystical church says it, then you're free to actually let the hermeneutical process be what it is. And you do not have to set a specific agenda for the teaching. The teaching can simply be what it is. And this really allows me to go deeper and wider beyond the boundaries of common tradition. And I liken it to just following the flow of the Spirit into new horizons. Now, this scares traditionalists and people with very kind of fundamental or rigid frameworks, because within those systems, you have to often guard against change and new perspectives. Well, I get that. I totally understand that. But I want to assure you that just because I'm unaffiliated in that sense, that doesn't mean that I'm a heretic. It doesn't mean that I'm venturing off into sinful or misdirected teaching. What I am doing is I'm letting the scripture actually breathe, actually letting it say and expand and contract as it does. And I think you're going to see that the more you listen to my content. And today, this is going to be an exceptional day because for many of you, you've never heard the message that I'm going to offer you today. And we're going to focus on John chapter 5, which tells of the mystical pool of water in Jerusalem called Bethesda. And it was believed that if the waters of this pool became stirred, like you'll see in John 5 verse 7, it meant that the Spirit of God was moving over the water. And whoever was the first person that would get into the pool of water, that person would receive healing. And so healing is synonymous with liberation. Right? It's also, ironically, in this story, depicted as something that is first come, first serve. Oh, God will heal you, but only if you're the first in line. Now, the story goes that an invalid had been sitting by the pool for 38 years. And when Jesus walks over to him, he asks, "Do you want to be healed?" And of course, the invalid just tells Jesus that, "Yes, I want to be healed, but nobody will help me into the water. And when the waters get stirred up, somebody else jumps in ahead of me. And so I don't get the healing." Because, of course, healing is first come, first serve in this religious framework. Now, I've heard sermons teaching that these were just excuses, that this invalid was just using excuses. And perhaps that's true. But you see, these were the imprisoned reality of the invalid, nonetheless. They were excuses, but that was how he saw his life. I mean, let's face it, he didn't have the ability to move himself into the water, and so he had to rely on others, and others kept putting themselves before him. But let's just pause for a minute and look here, because it really shows us that self-pity is the very first prison from which we are freed. And if you haven't heard me say this before, you'll hear me say it certainly more than this, but nothing good ever follows self-pity. So if you're one of those people who's prone to self-pity, just know that that is a prison from which I think you need to become free. And healing is synonymous with freedom, right? Healing and freedom are the same thing. And so my question to you today is, what is your imprisoned reality? Where are you stuck? What keeps you from being free? What is your excuse? What is your framework of reference that says, I would be free or happy or healed if only what? Now, religion, and you always hear me picking on religion, and it's not because I'm negative or down or whatever. I'm just trying to have solidarity with the teaching of Scripture. And the teaching of Christ was extremely critical of religious frameworks. And so I think if you're going to have solidarity with the teachings of Scripture, you need to have solidarity with the same criticisms of religious frameworks, because they exist today in the same way that they exist back then. They harm and limit people the same way today as they harm and limited people back then. And religion is like the imprisoned reality of the invalid. And if you don't see that parallel, it's going to become very clear by the end of this talk. You see, religion has proximity to the pool, right? It's really close to where all the magical stuff is supposed to happen. But religion never really gets in the water. See, religion is like the invalid there. It has all the pomp and circumstance. It has these special services with candle lights and incense and smoke and songs and all the drama. But it can't really get you there. What actually has to happen has to take place within you and within me. It's never on the outside coming in. It's always on the inside, isn't it? So religion kind of doles out pseudonyms. I call them fake IDs, right? It gives us an identity. It tells us who we are, but it's not really who we really are. And it helps us in its little assimilation programs, right? I mean, all religion is about how to get an outie and turn them into an innie. And like that, it's not unlike the Sneetches on the Beaches and Dr. Seuss's great, you know, children's story. Or you got to put the star on the belly of the Sneetch. It's the machine that puts the star on. You know, and that gives us a false hope, because once you have the star on your belly, you see everybody else as a non-starred person, which pits you against them. And so religion has this effect. It doesn't matter what religion you subscribe to. Even within the Christian religion, a particular denomination does this, right? The one denomination pits itself as better than another denomination. And it does this by saying our star is greener or bigger or fatter or wider or better than your star. Or you guys don't even have a real star. You guys aren't even real believers like we are. And so here's what Jesus does in this scenario. That's the framework. That's the religious framework into which this is taking place. Jesus responds to this invalid, and he does so by dropping what I think is a nuclear bomb on this invalid's imprisoned reality. He simply tells the guy, get up, pick up your mat, and walk. Pick up your mat and walk. Now, most sermons stop here. They stop there because they're just celebrating the fact that Jesus healed the man. And I think that's great. That's fine if you want to stop the sermon there and talk about how Jesus had the power to heal because he was God. You could use this as a proof of his deity if you wanted. But that really misses Jesus' gravely subversive message that he's making here. You see, it was the Jewish Sabbath. You know, and keeping the religious day holy meant not working. And carrying a bed mat around was considered work. And so was walking around. You couldn't walk around very far because that would be considered work. And what Jesus was saying is this. He says, your healing comes by breaking the Ten Commandments. Your freedom comes by breaking with religion. Do you see that? Do you see that when he commands him to get up, pick up his mat, and walk, he's telling him to break the Sabbath? That is a sobering message. In fact, much of Jesus' controversy is that he performed many of his works on the Sabbath day, and he broke with religious law all the time. And this is really important to understand. You see, Jesus said that he was Lord of the Sabbath in Mark 2:28. And in 2:27, he said, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. And so his message really exposes how religion imprisons humanity, while unaffiliated faith actually liberates us. And man, I'm big on this. I'm big on unaffiliated faith. And I know, like I said at the beginning, that scares highly affiliated people. Why? Because you've taken the fake ID offered by your tradition. You've bought hook, line, and sinker that tradition is the right one, the most honorable one, the most doctrinally correct version, and therefore everything else is diminished. Once you take that fake ID, everything else is diminished. It's an other than. And this is why unaffiliated faith liberates people, because you are not stuck into that framework. Remember, we don't fight against flesh and blood. It's not the other people who are different than you. It's principalities and powers and rulers. It's systems of authority, right? This is the real problem. It's institutionalism. Now, this is amazing because, see, Jesus offers something beyond ritual. He's offering something beyond dogma. He's offering something beyond religious practice. It's not like, hey, invalid, all you need to do is get with the program. Do your ritual, believe your dogma, jump in the religious practice. No, 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 no. He's providing liberty that religion promises but doesn't deliver. He's giving that man, and, you know, by default, us as well, liberty. that religion promises but cannot deliver. His message is that love surpasses religious conformity. In Matthew 9:13, he says, "Go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice." Now I ask you, go to your church, go to any church you've ever been to, go to any religious institution and ask them, do you see mercy influenced, or do you see mercy emphasized, or do you see sacrifice emphasized? Is it something that's going to cost you, or is it something that you're just going to give away? You see, this is the subversive message of Jesus saying, hey, unaffiliated faith is where love resides, not an institutionalized religion. And I know that makes me a little bit unpopular, but guess what? That's what's turned me into an online pastor with many, many, many followers across this globe who have realized that their religious system has failed them and it doesn't answer the questions that they have. And they're looking to a place and they've been exiled and moved to the sidelines and they're trying to understand, what is it that I really believe? And how can I understand who God is and how he works in our life without throwing out the baby with the bathwater? That's a whole new world. You see, unaffiliated faith truly does liberate us and lead us to love. Now, Jesus offers something beyond the ritual, like I said, and the dogma. He offers mercy, not sacrifice. But like the religious elite of Jesus' day, modern religious leaders are often caught up in their traditions, aren't they? I mean, how many of our pastors and religious leaders are just focused on their buildings, the needs of their staff, their budgets, their plans, their programs, or their doctrine? I mean, most of these systems, and I know this as 25 years in church ministry, folks, they're struggling to get by. They're barely limping along, and they're basically, you know, Jesus is standing, answering their prayers, just saying, do you want to be healed? You see, like the invalid, some of these churches out there and religious institutions are asking for healing, but not realizing that healing comes with a counterintuitive departure from the rules. Lawbreakers experience a liberty that abiders cannot possess. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that in a second, but let's focus on this invalid in the story for a second. After this invalid is healed, he parades around on the Sabbath with his bed in his hand, and he is the talk of the town. And make no mistake about it, open violations of religious law, no matter where you are intolerable for a system that uses fear for behavior modification, right? You can't go along very free for very long, without being shut down because others are going to start to act the way you do. We don't want them as free as you, so your freedom has to be curtailed. And the loss of fear by the invalid equates to the loss of institutional power. Do you hear that? Do you see that? When he's free to walk around, his healing meant he was free from institutional power. And Jesus knows that fear, not love, makes people compliant to their prison. You know, and I think hell is actually our inability to break free of institutional power, not only here, but in any other life to come. So how does institutional religion react to this invalid? Well, of course, just like everyone, they diminish the invalid. They curb the freedom. They cast doubt on the liberty and they ultimately squash anybody who subscribes to the reality beyond their own propaganda. No. Don't go out there looking for an answer. Our answers are sufficient. If you go out there and take their answer, then you are a heretic. You're wrong. You're dangerous. You're a problem. You see, institutions steal personal power by defining reality for others. Do you realize that? Jesus does. And he redefines reality for this invalid. Now, here's something that I think is often missed when this story is taught. And I really want you to hear it. Jesus catches up to this guy a little bit later. And he says something that I think is often misunderstood. He says, hey, I see you're well. I want you to sin no more so that nothing worse will happen to you. He says that in verse 14 of chapter 5. Now, I've heard sermons suggest that Jesus is saying that this is just a sin that caused him to be an invalid, and that a future sin would actually cause something worse to happen to him. Now, that really saddens me, because that is the furthest thing I think Jesus is saying. He's not saying that sin made you an invalid, and if you screw it up again and start sinning again, something worse is going to happen. That's just another power play designed to keep people trapped in fear, right? That's the opposite, exact opposite of what the story is promising to do. You see, Jesus' statement is a loving but sobering reminder of his present reality. I mean, it means his freedom, which is expressed by his present sin of violating the Sabbath, could get him killed by the religious elite. See, Jesus is saying, you're healed, you're free. I'm so glad to see that. But you see, not everybody else around here is healed and free. And those enslaved in fear, or whose identity and power is wrapped up in this system, they're going to deeply resent you and try to harm you. See, sin no more is kind of a nod, nod, wink, wink. I see that you're sinning. You're breaking the commandment. Don't do that anymore. Just kind of keep it down, chill it out a little bit, because if you don't, they're going to take your freedom. They might even take your life. That is a sobering and loving message, not a threat. See, subverting institutional power always comes at a cost, and who knows that more than Jesus? The path of healing offered by Jesus stands right in the face of the ethical violence imposed upon us by institutional power. And it may cost us severely to walk freely away from it, but it's going to ultimately cost us more if we stay. And so the only way to obey the fourth commandment of remember the Sabbath and to keep it holy, the only way to obey it and keep it holy in this case was to actually break the tradition of keeping the Sabbath. The only way to honor the commandment, the heart of the commandment, was to break the letter of it. And the good news, the gospel of liberation and healing, is not a world with no rules, folks. I'm not supposing that we should just abandon all rules. No, no, no. It's a world that's governed by one rule, and that's the rule of love. And so if we think we have God within our highly structured, organized, and dogmatic containment systems, and trust me, when you talk to most deeply religious people, that's exactly what they have. They've got God all figured out, and they've got it in this nice, tidy little box. But when we have that, we have a religion. We do not have God. You see, if fear makes us unable to leave such a system, in our search for healing, in our search for liberty, then we have become the invalid. Do you hear me, folks? If fear makes you unable to leave a system like that, you have become the invalid. And perhaps the most liberating nuance comes once we gain the eyes to see beyond the power plays. And that's really what this great message is all about. It's where we regain our personal power to sin no more, like it says in verse 14. It's how we know that we're healed. You see, only the person free enough to break the rules is free enough to keep them in love. Only the person free enough to break the rules is free enough to keep them in love. And so once fear loses its grip, obedience can emerge from the pure motivation of love. As long as your obedience is coming out of fear, you are trapped in a prison. See, perfect love casts out fear, like it says in 1 John 4:18. And only by leaving religion are we free and empowered enough to restore it to the institution that can bring healing to the world. And I think that is the bigger message that Jesus is bringing by the healing at the Pool of Bethesda. Thank you so much for tuning in. Come back next week as we continue exploring familiar Bible stories so that we can hear them again for the very first time. Greetings, everyone. I'm Kevin Winder from Beyond Everything Radio, and I really want to encourage you to go to my website right now and sign up for Winder's Windshield. That's my weekly newsletter, and you can find it at kevinwinder.com. When you sign up, you'll join all the others in the virtual space. Each Sunday morning, you'll get a link to my blog, my radio program, and my podcast. You'll be the first to access new content, uncoaching opportunities, and webinars, and so much more. Sign up now and you'll get a free e-version of my book, Getting Better When You Can't. Now, go to kevinwinder.com and remember, I spell Kevin like the number 7. Go to kevinwinder.com and look for Winder's Windshield and sign up today.